Hey, it's Stephen Henderson. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about juvenile justice reform here in Michigan. A slate of bills passed the legislature in 2023 were signed into law by Governor Gretchen Whitmer in December of that year and take effect now. What will they change about the way we deal with young minds that interact with our criminal justice system? And what will be the future? What other things do we need to do and think about to make sure that juvenile justice is not just about punishment, but is also about opportunity and rehabilitation? To start the show, we're joined by two guests who have been instrumental in pushing for these reforms that we see today. Lauren Cagalli is the executive director of the ACLU of Michigan. Lauren, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me.
Also, we are joined by Nathan Triplett, the State Bar of Michigan Director of Public Policy and Government and ACL Michigan Board President. Nathan, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's start here. There have been a series of important reforms to juvenile justice signed into law in December. Before we get to potential improvements, I want to get your overall take on the slate of bills that were passed, how we got to this point, and maybe what is still in front of us. I know we're never quite done when we try to make these kinds of changes. Lauren, I'll start with you.
Thanks. You know, as you mentioned, there's have long been decades upon decades of really systemic deficits to our criminal legal system as a whole. And, you know, the recommendations that came out of the Juvenile Justice Task Force, which was a really important step towards digging into some of those problems, especially where there wasn't sufficient data to really understand what was happening to kids who became ensnared in the criminal legal system and delinquency proceedings, are important because they're geared at getting at root causes and really ultimately trying to keep kids out of the criminal legal system, especially when they're ending up embroiled in that system because of poverty, instability in housing, food instability, and really meet those needs. And so it's exciting to see Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist and the task force take those steps to make the recommendations and to have the Senate so readily adopt the majority of those recommendations and turn them into law.
Yeah. Give us a thumbnail, I guess, of what the juvenile justice system kind of looks like pre these reforms and some of the bigger problems that we have, making sure that, as I said in the open, that rehabilitation is kind of at the center of what we do with juvenile justice.
So one of the biggest challenges that we've seen over the year, both with respect to the adult criminal legal system and the criminal legal system and delinquency as it relates to youth, is that there really just hasn't been consistent collection of data. So part of the problem is we just don't know what's happening. And that's really been at the core of creating the task force and the recommendations that have come out of it. Now, some of the recommendations are critically important because what they're really trying to do is divert kids who should not become part of the criminal legal system or part of the youth become, you know, sort of ensnared in delinquency proceedings, moving them out of the court system to make sure that they are, you know, the court system isn't sort of creating a gateway into the adult criminal legal system, which we know is often the case. And the other thing that I think is critically important about these recommendations is it really is working to get, again, with data, to acknowledge and get at the racial disparities that we see play out in our criminal legal system, in particular in the criminal legal system as it impacts youth.
Yeah, yeah. And Nathan, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're somebody who has been around public life here in Michigan for some time. You were also the youngest ever elected mayor of East Lansing, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Talk about this issue and how we have kind of made a mess of it, I guess, over a long period of time, and what you think the slate of bills will change about that situation.
And the word I've heard most to describe the impact of this package of bills, which I use myself, is transformational. And in your introduction to this segment, I think you really focused in on one of the key elements, which is making our approach to juvenile justice in Michigan data-driven. It's not that we don't know what the challenges are, and it's not that we don't know what the solutions are that work. It's that we haven't had the resources in place and the systems in place to implement them here in the state of Michigan. In all sorts of areas around the JJ system, including one of the issues that we'll be talking about this morning, indigent defense, which you see is this patchwork approach, so that the county you happen to reside in has a lot to do with the type of services you're going to receive and whether or not you end up in secure detention versus a community placement, whether you have supportive services, whether you were provided with counsel in these proceedings as well. And so I think one of the key pieces of this is recognizing that it shouldn't matter whether you live in Detroit and Wayne County or Grand Rapids and Kent County or Traverse City and Grand Traverse County. If you're a young person who finds yourself as a system impacted individual, you should have an assurance that you're going to get the same level of service, and that we're going to be focusing on addressing support for young people and getting them on the right path and having positive outcomes and not being unnecessarily punitive to the detriment of that individual and their communities and our state.
Yeah. We have, I think, something of a cultural or narrative problem, I think, around the idea of juvenile justice, in the sense that there are a lot of people who are really focused on, hey, these are bad kids or bad apples and they need to be punished. I feel like we still run into that pushback when you talk about changing the system to actually rehabilitate young people instead of punishing them. What are the things that we need to do, I guess, to win more of that argument, to get people to recognize and accept all the research that we know is out there that says, especially when you're dealing with young people in the juvenile justice system, it really has to be on rehabilitation and getting support where it didn't exist before someone got into trouble.
Yeah, and your listeners will hear more about this from one of the guests you have coming up, but I think it's so critically important to remind people that we are talking about children who we know from the science, their ability to comprehend consequences and the impact of their action to project out into the future what will be the result of a certain type of behavior is just less developed than an adult. And the reason we have historically a juvenile justice system is in recognition of the fact that that immaturity makes people less culpable for their conduct, and we can intervene at an early stage to put people back on the right path. And I think part of the way that you make that case to the broader public is pointing out that not just that individual young person and their family, although certainly them, but their community and our state are better off when we have more of our young people who are becoming productive, contributing members of society who can achieve their full potential. And the research is pretty clear. The path to achieving your full potential is not justice system involvement. It's getting the supportive resources necessary to be able to develop a career and pursue your passions and have the support necessary to do that, not be siphoned off into the youth equivalent of the criminal legal system.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about juvenile justice reform, and our guests are Lauren Cagalli, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Michigan, as well as Nathan Triplett, who is the State Bar of Michigan Director of Public Policy and the board chair of the ACLU of Michigan. We're talking about a slate of bills signed into law in December that will bring significant changes to our juvenile justice system here in Michigan. It was a promise that Governor Gretchen Whitmer made a while back, and there has been a two-year process to come up with this slate of bills and get them through the legislature. We would love to hear from you, the listeners, while we have this discussion as well. Do you believe that juvenile justice reform is something we need to be focusing on here in the state of Michigan? Would especially love to hear from folks who have been involved in a juvenile justice case or have family members who have been involved in juvenile justice cases. What was the experience like, and what do you think would improve the system and the process? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today and we can make you part of the program that way. Okay, I want to talk specifically about House Bill 4630, which is about legal representation. Let's start with what the current legal representation landscape looks like for juveniles in Michigan and how that's different than it is for adults.
Sure. Thanks. I'll grab that question. Yeah. If that's okay, Nathan. So this is a really important question. And I do want to say the assessment of the juvenile legal system as it exists in Michigan and representation of juveniles is not a new discussion. In 2020, the Galt Center did an assessment of Michigan along with several other states and came out essentially finding that there was no system in place in order to ensure that juveniles or children who were charged with, were involved in delinquency proceedings, were assigned counsel and certainly not quality counsel. Mm-hmm. And so they made a couple recommendations. One was that there be state oversight of the delivery of youth defense services, to that mandatory standards be put in place to ensure that there was accountability for what those services look like. And finally, that there's adequate funding to ensure that those services can be provided at a constitutional level. And so what's happening in Michigan is in the last 10 years, Michigan has invested in ensuring that adults who are charged with in the criminal legal system, that when they face charges, that they have the right, as required by the U.S. Constitution, to have effective assistance of counsel. In other words, they have the right to have an attorney present with them when they appear in court to defend them zealously mm-hmm. Against the charges brought against them. Yeah,
go ahead.
And the reason that's so important is because liberty is one of our most fundamental constitutional rights. And when the government charges someone with a crime, it's critical that the government is held to its burden of proof before someone's liberty is taken away. As part of that, the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission was formed and created minimum standards that allows, that enables the state to oversee the provision of indigent defense services for adults. That system does not yet exist for youth, and House Bill 4630 would expand the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission Act to include youth under its umbrella.
Yeah. Of course, if you did that, it would cost some money. And I wonder if some of the slow pace or pushback is about what it would cost.
So I'm going to start off just by saying sometimes constitutional obligations cost money.
Yeah.
And this is a constitutional obligation that has been neglected for many, many years. I also just want to highlight a couple things. You know, one of the things that's really important to note is that because of the work that's been done on the adult indigent defense system over the last decade, there is infrastructure statewide now into which a youth defense system could plug in. So things are not being developed out of whole cloth mm-hmm. in the way that they were 10 years ago. You know, the state has committed to funding indigent defense for adults, and quite frankly, children just can't be left behind yeah. in that
I
equation.
I mean, frankly, it's rather remarkable that we have kind of segregated youth out of the efforts to bolster indigent defense for adults. You would think, you know, from a moral standpoint, young people might have come first in that equation. But again, I mean, I think that gets to the difficulty we have in having people really understand how different this is from a young offender's perspective. Nathan, I want to get your reaction to all of this as well.
Yeah, Lauren mentioned earlier the Galt Center's assessment of the state of Michigan, and I think it's important to put a direct point on this. Their conclusion was that our current system allows constitutional rights to be inadequately protected for young people. And Lauren's right, it costs money sometimes to implement constitutional rights. But I think that this program of expanding juvenile defense is a bargain at twice the price. And more importantly, we need to think about it in the long run. So yes, it costs some money to provide counsel in the short term mm-hmm. to young people, mm-hmm. but providing counsel improves the efficiency and effectiveness of those proceedings because you have lawyers who understand court procedure and can help bring the voice of those young people to those proceedings. And certainly the cost to the state and its citizens and its communities in the long run of making sure that those young people are diverted when appropriate and that they have their rights recognized will create long-term savings as well. So undoubtedly, a lot of this conversation is going to be around the price tag. But just like we do with our own family budgets, you've got things that are essentials and things that would be nice. And meeting our constitutional obligation to provide a right to counsel to young people certainly belongs on the column of things that are essentials. And the state has an obligation to pay for it and implement it. And that's what I hope they'll do by passing this legislation.
Yeah. Okay. Lauren Cagalli and Nathan Triplett, great to have both of you here to talk about these reforms and the need to keep pushing to get more of the reforms enacted. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
We've been talking about the juvenile justice system here in Michigan following significant changes that were signed into law by Governor Gretchen Whitmer in December of 2023. We want to continue that conversation here on Detroit Today and learn a little more about these changes as well as what the future of juvenile justice could look like in our state. We're joined now by Senator Sylvia Santana, who represents Michigan's 2nd District, which includes Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, as well as parts of Allen Park and Detroit. Senator Santana, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning to your listening audience.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So I want to start with your assessment of what happened in December and the effect it's going to have. Which of these reforms do you think will have the biggest impact, especially here in Southeast Michigan, which is, of course, the most populous part of our state?
Well, thank you, Stephen, for your question. I think all of them will have a significant impact, but most importantly, I think one of the biggest, resolutions to the juvenile justice system is being able to divert our youth to community-based programs to help support them in our communities versus sending them to residential treatment centers, which has nationally been proven not to help support youth moving into actual corrections. And so we're happy that youth will be diverted and also that our judges and our prosecutors and have other options to make sure that kids get the wraparound services they need in our communities.
Yeah. In what ways do you think this is a major departure, I guess, from the way that we've dealt with this for a long time? Would you say this is a sea change in the way that we're thinking about juvenile justice, especially in the legislature here in Michigan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a sea change of how we're thinking about public safety in general. When you think about the last 40 years of being tough on crime and locking people up with no real way of reforms or recidivism being really an option, we are moving in a different direction. Nationally, it's been proven that crime has been lower and communities are safer. And I think that this is just a part of that initiative of restructuring how we think about reforms and making sure that our youth are being diverted from the adult system. And I believe that this is the necessary for us to make sure that we are putting on them on the proper trajectory and not to the prison to pipeline.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk specifically about the parts of Metro Detroit that you represent and the things that you see with regard to juvenile justice that speak to disparities and inequality and how the way we have been handling juvenile justice in the past here kind of exacerbates those gaps in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, Allen Park and Detroit. What does that look like from your chair?
Yes, when you compare to those who were diverted as youth from being arrested formally and, you know, dealing with the court systems, I think you see a difference as far as their trajectory in life. You know, research finds that their people, the youth's involvement in the justice system undermines public safety, and it also reduces young people's future successes. And so I think one of the biggest things that, you know, we've seen in our communities is that, you know, judges within the community have tried ways of making sure that not only youth are being diverted into doing like civil service or just, you know, working in a community to do volunteerism to support that diversion, but also making sure that their parents have that support as well. I think, you know, ultimately the challenges that youth have usually are resulting around their needs. You have kids who are transient, they're couch hopping in our communities. They, you know, parents, you know, financial situations are not often stable. And so that's why you see youth committing the type of, you know, minor crimes or petty theft crimes that are resulting in them interfacing with the juvenile system in the first place. So I think that by us being able to have community-based programs and give youth who committed minor offenses opportunities to get those wraparound services in the district and be able to help the whole family, it helps with that diversion process as well.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Sylvia Santana. She's a state senator who's serving her second term in the Michigan Senate. She represents the 2nd District, which includes all of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, as well as parts of Allen Park and Detroit. We are talking about a slate of bills that passed the legislature last year and were signed into law by Governor Whitmer in December. They really do change the face of our juvenile justice system. They lean more toward, I guess, a holistic approach to justice for young people who get themselves into trouble as an effort to prevent them from getting into more trouble after they're released from custody. We would love to hear from you, our listeners, while we have this conversation. Give us a call. Let us know if you think the juvenile justice reform changes that are taking place are good for Michigan. We would especially love to hear from folks who have firsthand experience with juvenile justice here in Michigan. Are you somebody who has had that yourself? Do you have family members who have had interactions with juvenile justice here in Michigan? And give us a sense of how that went, the things that you saw that seemed inadequate or inappropriate, the things that you might change to the system to focus more on rehabilitation and getting people opportunity once they get into trouble. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can make you part of the program that way. Senator Santana, I want to talk a little more about something that we were talking about with our previous guests. Even though it was able to pass the House last year, one item that was missing from the series of bills that were signed into law was the proposal to authorize the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission to fund and develop training and standards for indigent youth defense in Michigan. I want to talk about why that was left out of the Senate bills when it passed the House. Talk about what happened to these proposals in the Senate.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Michigan Indigent Defense recommendations that were a part of this package, House Bill 4630, definitely were left on the table. And as you know, anything in government that requires changes also require time and money. Mm-hmm. And so that requires patience as well as stability. And when you look at the Michigan Indigent Defense for the adults, the recommendations that were made there have not fully been implemented thus far. We haven't put all of those levels in place for supporting our adults. And so I think, you know, one of the things that we need to do is just make sure that, one, that we have, the adult system working properly, but more importantly, also making sure that we're being deliberative with integrating the youth Michigan Indigent Defense within the adult system. So I think that we want to make sure that we're being deliberative, but more importantly, everything has a price tag to it. And so even with this, we want to make sure that we're doing it properly. But to your question, Steve, and I think also, you know, when we look at the Michigan Indigent Defense as well, and also the other juvenile bills that we have put in place, we're hoping that through the implementation of these laws that we currently have put in place for our juveniles, that hopefully we're diverting a lot of our youth back into the community where we won't see that uptick in need for the MIDC juvenile supports. But more importantly, being deliberative about putting those implementations in place is most important. And also it costs time and money.
Yeah. So give us a sense of the prospects for this legislation in the next legislative session, which of course started yesterday and we'll get going pretty soon. Do you expect that you can clear those hurdles this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, when anytime at government, when things need to get done, yes, we can clear the hurdles. It will take some time, but I definitely think it's something that we will be able to do through this process, you know, but obviously it requires money. And so that's going to, you know, impact our budgets and how we make that happen. But anything is possible at this point as far as timeline goes.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and be part of the program that way. Let's start today with Peter in Detroit. Peter, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen. Happy New Year, and good morning and Happy New Year to your guest.
To you as well.
The one thing that I really would like to see the legislature do, and I'm not sure I'm seeing that in what you've been discussing so far, is I think that we ought to completely abolish trying juveniles as adults. Children are not adults. They don't have the full reason and rational capacity that adults have. We know that through science. We need to stop pretending like they're adults because they did a bad thing.
Yeah. Of course, that is what the prevailing research all says about young people. And I don't know that there's much of a debate about that anymore. But you're right. The ability to, in the case of very serious crimes, and it really is limited to those serious crimes, to try young people as adults still exists. And it still happens. In fact, we're watching right now part of that process unfold as Ethan Crumbly, who was the young shooter at Oxford High School, is going to be tried as an adult. And there's a lot of emotion on both sides of that issue. Senator Santana, I wonder if this issue has come up in the discussions about juvenile justice reform. I know it wasn't part of the bills that got passed or even crafted last year, but I wonder if it's something that maybe is lurking in the background and may end up coming to the fore at some point.
Well, I believe we have tried to divert youth in several capacities as far as, minor crimes. Obviously, through Raise the Age, we have expanded the trying up to 18-year-olds versus, you know, just putting youth incarceration at 17. So that's one of the things that we have implemented into law in order to make sure that we are giving them a fair chance. And as your caller, Peter, said, there has been studies to show that the brain is not fully developed at 18, 19, 20, all the way up to 26. And so we have expanded the age on, you know, what how we look at those crimes as well.
Yeah.
Also, it's very important to, you know, they also have to be eligible. And, you know, in a case where the crime, the offenses are a murder and egregious, I think that, you know, that's something that has to be looked at the discretion of the judge and the courts.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk a little about outcomes and what you, I guess, expect from this package of bills in terms of outcomes. And I kind of want to focus specifically on the data collection end of this. Our previous guests from the ACLU talked an awful lot about the gaps in data collection that exist in the system currently and the way in which these bills try to fix that. I wonder what effect you think that will have as these new laws take effect.
Well, I would just say this, Stephen, you know, during my duration and the time frame in the legislature, I've worked on several criminal justice reform specific task force, whether it be looking at sentencing guidelines to pretrial incarceration task force, and then also the juveniles. And one of the things that Michigan is really good at is being decentralized. What I mean by that is that every county has their own system of keeping records, and there's not really a statewide system that is being utilized to capture this data. So hence why Raise the Age took so long for Michigan to actually enact versus other states that have one centralized system for communication and data.
Mm-hmm.
And so even through this process, working with our stakeholders to retrieve this information, they had to go to each, you know, 21 of the counties that were part of the study in order to retrieve that information. But it's imperative that even through the Health and Human Service Department, where we actually have the child care fund that supports many of the juvenile issues, that we are collecting data. But like I said, it's something that has to be all hands on deck, and that everyone from each county is engaged in that process. And so I think that if we can bring those records to the state with uniformity and find a way to house those records within one system, I think it will be most beneficial to the state overall in the long term.
Yeah.
And I think that we're moving in that direction, but it does take time.
Yeah. Okay. State Senator Sylvia Santana, great to have you here to talk about these reforms in our criminal justice system as it relates to juveniles. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
All right. Thank you.
Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Covering the recent proposals and changes to juvenile justice here in Michigan, and we want to turn the corner a little bit in the conversation to get a better understanding of the importance of juvenile justice reform. We're joined now by Kimberly Thomas, a clinical professor of law and the director and co-founder of the Juvenile Justice Clinic at Michigan Law. Kimberly, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. It's so great to be here.
So let's get your reaction to this slate of bills that were signed into law in December. How big of a change should we be expecting from this package of reforms?
So this package of reforms is really important. We in Michigan, you know, haven't really given prior to this effort the sort of time and attention to thinking holistically about our juvenile justice system. And so the task force was really an opportunity to learn more about how our system is functioning and where we can, you know, have practical solutions that are based in data that can do better for our young people.
Yeah. So I would love to have you, given your work and expertise, talk about why the juvenile justice system has to be thought of and designed and managed differently than the rest of the juvenile or the rest of the justice system, which deals with adults. What is it about juvenile offenders and the way we manage their misdeeds and adjudication that requires us to think differently about it.
Right. So the juvenile system started over 100 years ago, really with a recognition that young people are different than adults. And more recently, we have developed a more, robust research understanding of how young people are different. So there's been a lot of neuroscience research that looks at the developing teenage brain. We have a lot more understanding of adolescent development, and that helps us inform that we can have a juvenile justice system that addresses both public safety and also the needs of young people in a developmentally appropriate way.
Yeah. That idea of centering the concept that not only are these different minds than we deal with in the adult system, but that they are in need of different support focused on opportunity, I think is something that there's a growing consensus around that, I guess, but it's not 100% consensus.
No, I mean, there's definitely a lot of roles that the juvenile court serves. One of those is holding kids accountable for when they make mistakes. Another one is helping kids, helping figure out what that individual young person needs to reintegrate with their community, reintegrate with their schools, reintegrate with their family, in a way that is going to put them on the right trajectory. And that's really important for us, right? We want people to graduate into employment and college.
Yeah, yeah. So a few years ago, you wrote an article called Reckless Juveniles that explored the relationship between adolescent cognitive development and the juvenile justice system. I want to talk first about what compelled you to write that article and then talk about your findings and conclusions.
So I was fortunate to be able to go to the University of Pennsylvania and get some training on adolescent development from, real experts that are not lawyers, so that really have an understanding. And so I think it's important to try to, translate those expertise to lawyers so that we can, learn from that information. We can learn from that research. Probably nothing earth-shaking to parents of teenagers, but we now have a greater understanding of, teenagers are very present-oriented, right? They think about today and not the long-term ramifications of the decisions they're making. Teenagers are influenced by their peers and the people around them, and that's true for all teens. It's not something that's unique to the juvenile court.
Right.
But we, want to be able to respond to that in what we're doing in the juvenile courts.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the reforms that have passed and what effect you think specifically they will have. And if there are specific bills that were in the package that you think we should have a closer eye on than others.
Yeah, so the reforms are really we're able to take a systematic approach. So the task force spent really a year looking at and understanding our current system, what are some of the strengths of that were, what some of the places where there had been maybe not as much investment or change. The big things that I know Senator Santana spoke to, the increase in diversion. And so, getting young people to, don't need to be court involved or deeply court involved, diverted from the juvenile system. The reforms also set up really more supports for communities and counties to be able to serve young people within those communities and counties and to really invest in young people where they live, in the counties where they're from. And that is a really significant change.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of outcomes, I think it's often difficult to predict what legislation will look like in action and how that will be different than what legislators imagine when they author these bills and get them passed. But I'm really curious about how much effect people think this might have. It's not a small number of changes. And as you point out, there are some significant ones. Should we expect that fundamental shift that I think is what the advocates for this reform are looking for in terms of just the way we approach the entire concept of juvenile justice here?
I think if these bills are successful, the outcomes that we'll see are a youth system that looks to the individual young person and tries to in a research evidence-based way understand, is this a low-risk person? Is this person who really needs a lot of supports from this community? And, you know, what are the individual needs and how can we serve those needs of the individual young person so that we would, not overserve kids who don't need it, right? That's not a sensible way to go. But also really, invest in kids that are really high risk.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Kimberly Thomas. She's a clinical professor of law and the director and co-founder of the Juvenile Justice Clinic at Michigan Law. We're talking about the slate of juvenile justice reforms that passed the legislature last year, were signed into law by Governor Whitmer in December. Also would love to hear from you, the listeners, about those reforms. Also, give us a call, especially if you are someone who's had interactions with the juvenile justice system. Give us a sense of what they were like and what you would do to be different, how you would like that system to be different. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. And you can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and be part of the conversation that way. I want to talk about what's left off the table here. We've talked with both our previous guests about juvenile justice indigent defense, which I think is a serious and important part of the reforms. I want to get your view on that and how important it could be, but also other things that weren't part of this package that you think we might encourage lawmakers to go back and think about again.
So there were certainly things that the task force recognized are really hard problems. So for example, the task force recommended and the governor has established a residential advisory committee that looks at placements for young people. And that's a really complicated problem. There's no way around that. And so there aren't, bills that change that whole system because it's an issue that needs to be thought through more. You know, everyone needs to be at the table to have a discussion around that before recommendations can be made. And so there are definitely things left undone. But, you know, we want to, you know, obviously things should be done in ways that everybody's heard and good solutions are proposed.
Yeah, yeah. What about indigent defense? How important is that to the picture here? Give us a sense of how poorly we manage it now and what would look different.
So the recommendations would help sort of lift the tide of all boats, if you will. So in some counties, there's amazing indigent defense systems. In some counties, there's very little oversight and support. And so what we really was recommended was a way for there to be a little bit of a standardization, sort of a baseline of support for those counsel. There's no, for example, there doesn't need to be training on adolescent development for people that work with these young people. And, you know, I have a teenager, I work with young clients, you know, you really, that's important to have an understanding of that yeah. in order to work effectively with someone. And so really making sure that there's the training and support there.
Yeah. Are you surprised that that wasn't more at the fore of these reforms? I mean, it seems like such a big gap, especially since we have taken steps in Michigan to do better with adults in terms of indigent defense. You would think, you know, children are almost always more vulnerable. That might have been, we might have led with that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, this entire process has helped us appreciate maybe how little we've focused on our young people in this system. And, you know, I think it's a good opportunity to say, hey, you know, where else have in other systems, we made improvements and should we also apply those in our youth justice system in a way that is consistent with the goals of that system? And so I think it's, you know, in some ways the very same question that of all the reforms.
Yeah. I also want to give you a chance, as before we run out of time here on the segment, to talk about the work at the Juvenile Justice Clinic at Michigan Law, the things that you see and encounter with regard to juvenile justice and I guess what the landscape looks like from that advocacy role.
Yeah, so I do training of young lawyers, so current law students there, and you know, it's a good challenge for a young lawyer to work with a teenager, mm-hmm. to learn about adolescent development, to learn about how the juvenile courts work. But I also think it's a space where young lawyers see a lot of hope. You know, they see the capacity for teenagers to grow. They see them have the capacity to change. You know, they see them reengaging in their schools. They see them acknowledging their mistakes. And so for me, it's really great because I can see law students see the potential.
Yeah, that, you know. Yeah, and learn early about the differences to be able to understand. I mean, you were talking earlier about that cognition about, hey, these are different individuals than adults. Getting that as a law student, I would imagine, would give you a real advantage when you were out practicing.
It gives them a lot of hope, which I think is a great way to start your professional career.
Yeah. Okay, Kimberly Thomas, it was really great to have you here to talk about these reforms and your work. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It's great to be here.
Today's episode of Detroit Today was produced by Sam Corey and Nick Austin. Our technical director and engineer is Nate Bender. Our assistant producer is Maddie Boyer. Editing and mixing is by Connor Anderson. Our music is by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. Our podcast manager is David Lyons, and our program director is Adam Fox. Detroit Today is a production of WDET Public Radio. If you love the conversations we have on Detroit Today, consider donating to WDET, the public radio station in Detroit that we call home. If you want to be a part of the conversation and call in, you can listen live every day on WDET.org or on the WDET mobile app. Or if you live in Southeast Michigan and still love listening to good old-fashioned radio like me, tune in to 101.9 FM.